This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
Welcome to this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry with Sam Lau.
Hey, hey.
We're recording just after the close today, August 19th. Sam, I don't know how much TV you're watching these days, but we just finished a prequel series. Better Call Saul ended on Monday and kicking off a new prequel on Sunday with, I think it's called House of the Dragon, the new Game of Thrones series starts on Sunday, just so you know.
All right, I'll be watching the House of Dragons there. Better Call Saul, I never really got into it too much, but I mean, I liked him, his character within the Breaking Bad series, and I heard good things. So maybe I'll catch up on that before I get to the prequel.
It's pretty interesting to have, two very large, very popular TV shows, both doing the sequels.
Yeah. But speaking of the Saul, the character of Saul, the actor that plays him, I watched the movie. I can't remember which one of those streaming platforms, but it's called Nobody. That was pretty interesting and very different from what I remembered him as in Breaking Bad. So if you have time, I'll put that back on you. Maybe you can check that one out.
All right. I think I've seen ads for it, so I'll check it out.
HBO Max. I remember that now. And since you're talking about the House of Dragons, then you should have the platform there.
All right. Let's do it. It was a quiet week, but it was a lot of market movement, or relatively a lot of market movement based upon the macro factors. So why don't we talk markets and then we'll get into the macro side.
Yeah. Beyond the telly, I guess we got the markets here with the wrap up on the week. It's pretty much a reversal in direction from what we talked about last week, where last week everything across the broad base indices was in the finished the week green. And for the most part, even the various subsectors within those indices were also green. This week's a little bit of the other way around, bro, as we like to call it here, with the broad indices all in the red, starting with the S&P 500 down 1.2% on the week-to-date basis. This puts it back over 10% negative again on the year-to-date basis here. In terms of the best performer, we had consumer staples bringing up the lead here with a positive 1.9% print on the week to date, and that makes consumer staples a new entrant into the positive year to date club, alongside energy and utilities. Staples up 1% for the year to date now. On the flip side, for the week to date performance, and it looks like as well as the year to date performance, is consumer services bringing up the rear in both of those categories. On the week to date basis, it's down 3.3%. And down over 25% on the year-to-date basis. So that sector is being challenged of late and for the year as well.
That one's been the worst performer for a long time now.
Yeah.
It's had some pretty terrible momentum.
Yeah. So, I mean, down 25% in the whole, just over 8 months is a pretty tough situation to get out. And as you said, the momentum proceeds this year. This negative momentum proceeds this year to date as well. So we'll continue watching for that one there, hoping for some improvement. Moving over to the treasury market, looking at the two-year treasury yield, it was flat versus last week's close. It stayed at 3.24%. Moving up to the 10-year, that's up 14 basis points in yield to close this week at a yield of 2.97. And the long bond up 11 basis points in yield to close the week at 3.22%. What that meant is you had a little bit of a steepening in the 10-year, two-year treasury yield spreads there. looking at it, it's up 15 basis points, but still inverted with a negative 0.27% spread right there between the tens and the twos. And what that meant for that actually meant for the broad-based bond index as measured through the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate, that's down 1.1% on a week-to-date basis, pushing it closer to negative 10% again on a year-to-date basis there. It's down 9.6% there, so just hovering a little bit above that negative 10 there. Within the subsectors that we look at within fixed income here, these different categories, U.S. Treasuries putting up the best print, but still negative 71 basis points for the week. Looking at the cohort there within the U.S. aggregate, MBS was the next best performer with a negative 92 basis points for the week, and IG corporate credit taking a big hit there, down 2.3%. For the week-to-date basis. And on the year-to-date, it's down 14.5% there. Pretty much the credit sectors, the below investment-grade credit sectors also did poorly this week alongside both their fixed income counterparts as well as the risk side of things as measured through the equity market here in the U.S. But the high-yield corporate credit down 2.5% and bank loans, floating rate sector there is down 1.4% on the week there. And then EM bringing up strongly in the rear, down 3.7% on the week-to-date basis and down over 18% year-to-date still. So a tough and challenging week for these traditional asset classes, I'd say fixed income in particular there. But moving over to the commodity market, there is no respite there either from some of this pain. It also is in the red, down 70 basis points on the broad-based Bloomberg Commodity Index. Looking at oil is down 2% on the week-to-date basis, but still holding on to that $90 handle with just 9 pennies on top of that as a little bit of a buffer for the week. Gold down 2.8%. And looking across the board, you know, we had a handful of positive prints in commodities led by natural gas, which continues to see price support and price upside pressure given some of the constraints that we've seen from the supply side on that commodity, both on both sides of the Atlantic here. So we'll continue to see that, but it's getting closer to this $10 mark. I saw earlier today it got around $9.50 per million BTUs. Right now it's at $9.29 for nat gas. So that's definitely been the superstar on a year-to-date basis across this entire scoreboard that we review on a weekly basis here.
It's interesting. Like last time we got to this level, you know, I guess in early June in nat gas, by the end of June, we were down, you know, 5.5, we're down 40%, you know, in 3 weeks. So it'll be interesting to see whether we get a breakout higher or kind of it just retraces where we went. Certainly from a fundamental perspective, looking at nat gas prices in Europe, that seems like maybe more upside from here in terms of nat gas prices.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting back to kind of those levels or, you know, that we saw pre-global financial crisis when the market for natural gas here, production here in the U.S. was a little bit different, especially with the shale revolution that we had that came about in the 2010s and after. But pre-global financial crisis, pre-2010 as well, you saw natural gas, as I pulled up here on the front month futures contract, it got as high as $15 per million BTU back in 2005. And the last time it was over 10 was back in 2008, it looks like, right before the GFC came in, and it just came crashing down to below $4. And then when you and I, Jeff, you know, we talk about nat gas, I tend to think about it usually as, you know, around $2 to $3 a million BTU, certainly not this kind of 9 handle that we've been talking about. So it's an interesting setup for where this could go, especially as the export needs maybe have increased and may stay that way for some time.
Well, as Jeff Sherman likes to remind us, there's a reason why nat gas is the widowmaker.
Yeah.
So super volatile. You know, it's like a cryptocurrency type volatility. So it's just something that we like to keep an eye on, something we like to watch.
Yeah, it's definitely a dubious title to have, right? Alongside the yen carry trade there. But you know, before we jump into the macro, maybe as a prelude, a lot of this red could be on the you know, the changing of that narrative that had come out post F1C, when people were, you know, taking some of the language from the presser as being dovish, but it seems like, some of the information that we got this week seems to be cementing that perhaps the pivot isn't what Powell and the other F1C members intended to convey. So, you know, perhaps, you know, talking about a dubious title, you know, maybe we can start putting in for the Fed being called the Widowmaker trade, as well as, you know, people may learn, you know, about the origins of "Don't fight the Fed" type talk.
That's right. I thought it was interesting. You know, maybe this time is not a Powell pivot. It's just a, you know, he wasn't as clear as he would have wanted to be.
Yeah.
Or maybe he wanted to be this clear and wanted to see how the market would react, and then, you know, had speakers lined up to kind of talk about it. But I mean, I'll get into the macro side then, as I start to front run myself here. It was a very quiet week in terms of the number of macro data points out there. On Wednesday, we got the retail sales. The headline number was flat, which was slightly below expectations. It was expected to be up 0.1%, came in at 0.0. But more people were looking at the ex auto and gas, since everyone knows the price of gasoline was coming down and had been coming down pretty much every day for a while there. So the ex autos and gas number was actually very strong. It was expected to be 0.4% and came in at 0.7%. So that kind of shows that the consumer is still strong. There's a lot going on. Maybe that'll help the GDP number coming out here for the third quarter, not necessarily for the second quarter. Well, on Wednesday, we also got the Fed meeting minutes from the last meeting. You can see that they said, you know, quote, participants observed that following the policy rate hike, the nominal Fed funds rate would be within the range of their estimates of. And I'm going to put my own emphasis on here, longer run neutral rate. And I think that, you know, Chair Powell forgot to put the longer run part in his press conference. So they're in that range where they think that, you know, I guess with, you know, if the inflation's at 2, they're like 2.5% on the Fed funds rate. That's where they would expect to be over the long run, given that inflation is not at 2 and well above 2. That they would expect to be have higher Fed funds rate. But yeah, I think that's kind of, people were kind of parsing his language, Jay Powell's language, when he's talking about being closer to the neutral level. But I think they forgot the long run part of things. And then on yesterday, we did get the jobless numbers. There was a streak of initial jobless claims being higher, or it was, I guess it wasn't higher, as Mark Kimbrough pointed out to us. It wasn't higher. There was 1 week when it was flat, but the streak of no declines in the initial jobs claims has ended at 19 weeks. That's a good sign. And also last week's numbers were revised slightly lower. So looking at it today, labor market continues to be strong based upon these numbers, and continuing claims continues to be flat at around 1.4 million. So from the labor side of things, so far have not been affected by these higher Fed funds rates. The LEI also came out yesterday. That number fell 0.4%. It was expected to fall 0.5, so right in the range of expectations. That put the year-over-year number at 0.0. So we're not negative. We always say when the LEI goes negative, that's a sign of a recession. So we're at 0.0. So we're not negative yet. Next month we do have a 0.7 rolling off. So, you know, unless we get a huge bounce back there, we would expect that the LEI would go negative mid-September.
Yeah, when you, in the notes here, I'm not sure if it was yours or Kimbrough's, when you were reading it with the word survive in there, for some reason I had that Gloria Gaynor song in my head, you know, so maybe we could be playing that for the next month, or maybe it'll be the theme song, surviving that not negative LEI year-over-year print for at least another month here.
I guess that, you know, once the data comes out only once a month, we can, you know, survive for another month. That's for sure.
Yeah. Let's blast it after this recording here.
All right. We do have some Fed speak, as you kind of noted earlier, Sam. St. Louis Fed President James Bullard was out on Thursday saying that he supports another large rate rise in their September meeting. Even though now they were saying there's no more forward guidance, I think Bullard said that he would expect 75 basis points. So, you know, he just can't resist himself talking about higher rates. You also had Esther George, who is the She's the host of the bank is the host of the Jackson Hole retreat, which starts next week. She said that she thinks the case for continuing to raise rates remains strong. The question is how fast that has to happen is something that her and her colleagues will continue to debate, but she thinks the direction is pretty clear. So rates, that's one of the other things where people talking about rates staying higher and staying at these higher levels for a little bit longer. And then, you know, Jim Bianco always likes to talk about the most honest kind of Fed ideas you're going to get out there are from former Fed presidents, because they're not part of the Federal Reserve system. So they can speak freely and they can speak honestly, and they don't have a, you know, the chairperson hanging over their head. And the former New York Fed president Bill Dudley was had a Bloomberg op-ed that it was interesting, because it basically said, and it started out with saying that Jay Powell at the Jackson Hole speech last year, he's like, he got it wrong in several important ways. He asserted that a nascent surge in inflation was, quote, likely to prove temporary, which we know that didn't happen, that the low unemployment rate understates the amount of labor market slack, and that we see little evidence of wage increases that might threaten excessive inflation. So this came out, and I'll front run us again. The Jackson Hole speech that Powell is going to give is next Friday. And so I think this op-ed was kind of interesting timing, where it says, you know, take everything that Jay Powell might say with a grain of salt, given his very poor track record at his Jackson Hole speech last year.
Yeah, I mean, so last year, I guess it had been around August, around that same time again. And when did Jay get spooked, really? Was it
November.
A couple months later, yeah. So like in November, 3 months later after that, he got spooked by the ECI data, I recall, watching that one on in the office, actually. Was I in the office? For some reason, I thought I was in the office, but it doesn't sound right. But I do think we were sitting there in the office actually watching it. So for some reason or another. But yeah, we'll see what happens. What kind of nuggets come out next week?
Yep. With that, things to keep an eye on for next week. We do get the on Tuesday S&P Global Manufacturing and Services PMIs numbers. These are the August preliminary numbers. Manufacturing expected to be 51.9, services 50.0. So if anything below 50 is contractionary, anything above 50 is expansionary. At 50 is kind of nothing change. The services number was below 50 last month. So getting it back to 50, I guess, would be considered a good thing for the economy. On Thursday, we get an update to the second quarter GDP number. It was negative 0.9. It's estimated to improve slightly to negative 0.8. Again, we would need a pretty big improvement there for that to flip positive. It's not out of the question, but we'd need some pretty good updated data going back for that to flip positive and have us not be in a, quote, technical recession at the end of the second quarter. And then on Friday is a big day. We get the personal income and spending numbers. Income is expected to increase by 0.6%, flat from last month. The spending is expected to increase by 0.4%, which is down from 1.1% last month. We also get the PCE, so the Fed's preferred inflation measure. Headline PCE is expected to be up 0.1% month over month, down from 1.0 last month. So kind of mirroring what happened in the CPI numbers. That would bring the year-over-year PCE to 6.4. And core PCE is expected to increase by 0.3% month over month. That's down from 0.6% last month. And that would bring the core year over year number to 4.7 from 4.8. So starting to get into the range where, 4.7% inflation doesn't seem that terrible. Maybe it's just because of all these other numbers and, PPIs and CPIs have been so high, but 4.7 seems like we're starting to get into the range where the Fed can maybe take their foot off the brake a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like the last few prints across the using CPI and then PCE and then PPI as well, it just seems like it's getting kind of to that point that Paul had mentioned a few presses ago where they're looking for it to stabilize, and it does seem like it's coming in. I know we had that 9.1 print, but around that we've had several 8.5s and 8.6s moving up on the upside, and then now on the downside we've had the 8.5. So maybe that qualifies as that state, that plateauing or stabilizing of CPI that we can, that Paul was looking for.
Yep. I think, I guess luckily for them, they get one more, not another PCE, but we get another CPI before they have to meet again. So we'll see that one will be very interesting. I think it comes out on September 13th, I believe.
You are correct. September 13th.
I remember because one, that's my dad's birthday. So happy early birthday, Dad. And two, I have to give a macro presentation a half an hour after the CPI number comes out. So going to do some updates on the fly there.
Sounds like you got to be adaptable. Get ready to stick and move on that,
that
presentation. So an early, you know, happy birthday to Mr. Senior Mayberry Senior, and then happy early good luck to you on that presentation.
Thank you. On Friday, we also get the final numbers for the August University of Michigan 5 to 10 year inflation expectations. If you remember, the preliminary number was 3.0. That's a little bit higher than people were expecting, but we'll see what that number comes out as. There's not enough economist predictions out there to give what the estimate is, but in that we'll see. You know, hopefully it doesn't surprise at the upside and freak out Jay Powell again. And then also on Friday, Jay Powell gives his speech at, I believe it's at 7 a.m. Pacific, his Jackson Hole speech. So it's something that we'll probably listen or watch, and we can tell everyone about it next week.
As you're talking about that, the preliminary versus the final August numbers for this inflation expectations on this University of Michigan survey, I was just wondering what really changes in between the preliminary and August for this survey of individuals that they provide. I mean, do they just not hit all the individuals that they wanted to on the first pass, or are they giving people to rethink about it and look up answers and come back to them with, you know, a revised number? But anyway, that's just something that struck me when you said the prelim versus the final numbers for these inflation expectations based on the survey that they provide.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. Like, how would you personally, if you got asked, what do you think the inflation is going to be over the next 5 to 10 years?
I'd have no clue.
I have no idea.
I'd just say 2%.
You extrapolate out what you have, right? Yeah, 2%. But how do you, like, you probably are like, what am I experiencing right now? Okay, it's not going to be as high as I'm experiencing right now. So just kind of guess with a number. Like, I have.
Yeah, it's like a finger, you know, wetting your finger and putting it in the air and trying to figure out how strong the wind's blowing, you know, that type of thing. So, I mean, these are things that you and I talk about all the time too, right? Just, I mean, the inflation part, right? We're not giving each other surveys of our expectations, but, you know, we talk about, you know, the components that drive the various consumer price baskets as well as the producer price baskets. But, you know, for us, if I were part of that survey, I don't know how I would answer. You know, it'd be something, you know, somewhat arbitrary, but just imagine, you know, your average person off the street that, you know, barely thinks about CPI, let alone it's, you know, the composition of the CPI or some type of inflation expectation, right?
Right.
Who knows what kind of price basket they're using within that inflation expectation survey as well, too. So I don't know how it's done, but either way, it's something that we tend to, you know, we were more dismissive of in the past, but now that Powell uses it, you know, or cites it, you know, then that's something that forces our attention, I suppose.
Yeah, it sounds like, and I would agree that we are still dismissive of it.
Based on that banter there. Yeah, I think you're right.
All right. Well, I guess that about wraps it up for this week, Sam. I'd like to thank everyone for listening in.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. This is Monday Morning Minutes. Please subscribe if you haven't already. And don't forget, you can pick us up each Monday before the bell. We're available on your favorite podcast platforms. And if we aren't, you can't find us, or if you have questions, comments, or if you have suggestions, send us an email. You can reach us at minutes@doubleline.com, or you can hit us up on the Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
And don't forget to check out our website, doubleline.com. And our YouTube channel is at youtube.com/doubleline capital. You can watch the latest episode of the Sherman Show podcast, where Jeff and Sam talk with Todd Rosenbluth about all things ETFs. And you can hear Sam cut off some interesting discussion because it was going to cut into the Sherman Says portion of the podcast. So I thought that was pretty funny when they start talking about baseball and you're like, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I only have some preset Sherman Says questions that come out, and Kimbrough helps me with those all the time. So it's, you know, I don't know much about baseball, so that was one of his contributions there. So I couldn't change it up too much on the fly.
That's right. Shows how finely tuned all of our podcasts are.
That's right. All right. Unscripted for sure.
That's right. Make sure to follow Jeff and Sam Sherman on Twitter at Sherman Show Pod. Hope everyone has a great week.
Yeah, thanks everyone, and good luck out there.
The audio presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the expressed written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates make any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Liability, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by any listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk. Copyright 2022, DoubleLine Capital.